worked in three shops, and I was really fortunate because the first shop I went into, as I told you before, I believe, it was like one big family. It wasn't a very big place. There was only 350 people there, including the cutters. But it seemed like we had quite a young element there, and we had more fun than anything else. I believe I told you how we used to sing, you know, and the foreman would come out and look over to me, and right away I'd say to him, Pincus, what are you looking at me for? He's, because you're the ringleader, he'd tell me, you know. And I'd start a song, and maybe somebody way at the other end would join in, and it was really fantastic. We really got along wonderful there. And at that time, we had what we called a social and athletic club, which was organized here, and we used to send the boys to different tournaments, you know, basketball, and we'd travel to Milwaukee and, you know, different places where they played. And they used to run socials. We used to only charge a quarter, and that money went into this social and athletic fund. And somebody from each shop was designated to collect this quarter from whoever belonged to it, you know.
So were there members in all the shops?
Well, yeah, like from Hartshafner Marks, a lot of the boys that played on the basketball team worked at Hartshafner Marks, like floor boys and, you know, things like that. And even when we had our dramatic club, a lot of the, some of the boys worked at Hartshafner Marks. See, if I could ever find any of those pictures of when we had these plays, I'll bring them down and show them to you. And then from there, when they moved out of the city, which was on May 1st, I believe I told you that too, and they went to Fort Wayne, Indiana, from there I went to C.B. Shane. And I worked at C.B. Shane for about 23 years. So that also was a smaller place. It wasn't a big place like Hart's or Kuppenheimer's or anything like that. And we were more or less closer together with the people there. Seems like when you're in a small place, it's always that way. You know, you're more intimate with each one, you know, and more friendly. But when you work in a big place like Hart's or any of these big companies, there's so many floors, and you really know the ones that you work with better than you do anybody else. Of course, like me being active in the union, there was a lot of people there from the different floors that I knew from the building here, coming to meetings and all that. So when I actually, after 23 years, and I went to work at Hart's, I knew a lot of the people I'd meet in the lunchroom and from knowing them here in the building, you know. And in fact, there was one little incident that happened. See, Rose and I started Hartshafner Marks in February. And that May we had a convention. Well, she and I were sent from our local, 275, to the convention as delegate and an alternate. We'd all send a delegate and an alternate. Then we'd kind of pool our money and we'd take an extra girl as a guest, you know, so that we had three girls there. So some of the people on the floor where we started to work at Factory B, says, how come they just started to work here and they're going to the convention? They were under the impression that you had to work there a certain length of time before you could go to convention, which wasn't so, you know. So it came to my ears, you know, that this remark was being passed. And to one of the girls that worked there, who was an assistant chairlady, her name is Anna Smuda, and she says, listen, those girls are very active in the union, and they're going to represent their local. It's got nothing to do with Hartshafner Marks. See? So, you know, it really made us laugh because these people didn't even know what the building was, you know. They just come and work, get their pay, and go home. They had families to take care of. They didn't know what a meeting was, you know. Where we devoted almost our entire life, I can say that I devoted my whole youth to this building. Because I got so interested in the labor movement and in the union and all that that I gave up all my outside friends, outside of my own family. In fact, my mother used to often say to me, if death, you know, they have an old saying in Italian, if death comes knocking at the door, they won't find you home. And I used to tell them, well, send them to over the union, they'll find me there.
Marie, you were talking, that's really interesting, though, because I remember you were talking about when you went to Shapiro's, I think it was, when you first got the job with the other two women, that at that time the Amalgamated organized there, and you at first, well, the way that you joined was because they did.
Yeah, well, see, because I was only a young kid, and I didn't know anything about unions at the time. And these two girls were, oh, one of them must have been about 5 years older than I was. And they had worked in tailor shops before, and they knew a little bit more about it. As I say, I had just been out of school only a couple of years. I still was wearing my hair down, you know. And so when I told my mother that Margaret and Josephine were joining the union, she says, well, whatever they do, you do. So that's what I joined. And what
kinds of things do you think were really influential in making you get, like you said, interested in the labor movement and in the union? And
well, until the building was put up, I'd never really was too enthused about the labor movement. I was just like the rest of them. Get my pay at the end of the week and go to work the next day and work and get my pay and go home, you know. But after the building was put up here and we joined the gym, first thing, and I got to meet Clara Leon and a few of the women from Local 275, which I belonged to, but I never attended any of their meetings. For one thing, I was working, as I told you, I was working nights. I started to work nights after 1920, after my father died. I remember this incident. I was before the class started, we had a room that had mats on the floor, you know, and I was laying on the mat doing some exercise all by myself before the class started. And Clara Leon and Minnie Senegal, who was one of our 275 executive board members, were talking near the doorway there. And all of a sudden, I heard him mention 275, so I started to listen to see what they were talking. So when they got through talking, their conversation, I said, gee, Local 275, that's the local I belong to. So Clara and Minnie looked at me, and they said, you do? How come you never come to meetings? I said, because they told me a bunch of old maids.
Who told you that?
I worked in a shop where they were all 39 members, and I used to go to their meetings whenever they had a meeting. And I don't remember if I mentioned this, but when we'd have a shop meeting, it would always be right after work. Right from work, we'd go there on Halsted Street to the shop meeting. So I'd always manage to sit at the last row right near the aisle, you know. So when the chairman would walk in with the business agent to start the meeting, I'd say, hello, whatever his name is, I forgot now. And I'd always greet the business agent, you know, and they'd say, hello, Marie. So the minute they'd start walking towards the front, you know, to the podium, I'd sneak out the door because I had to be at the theater by 6:30. See? I couldn't stay for the meeting. And the next day, somebody would managed to tell me what the meeting was all about.
Was it important for you to let him know that you were there?
Well, I just wanted him to know that I was there, you know, so he wouldn't say to me, how come you didn't come to the shop meeting, you know. So one time the chairman said to me, say, did I see you at the meeting last night? I said, well, you certainly did. Don't you remember? I said, hello to you. See, I was foxy like that.
Did he know that you were in 275 then, or was that before?
Yeah, they knew I belonged to it. Because at that time, they didn't really make any big issue about people transferring locals, you know. In fact, to a lot of them, they thought the ladies' local was a joke, you know, in those days. But then...
So they didn't make much of an issue?
No, they didn't make much of an issue of it at the time, you know. But then in later years, in order to transfer any local, you had to come up to the office here, and the party had to sign something that they wanted to transfer to such and such a local, which some of the people did, you know. Like, a lot of people were put in 270, which was the Italian local, and they didn't even speak Italian. Because, see, the Italian local, they'd hold all their meetings in Italian, you know, in those days. I don't know what they did in later years. But most English-speaking people would all join 39. But they were never told that there was a ladies' local until I become chairlady at Sibishin. See, then I'd always mention we had a ladies' local, and invariably the women had joined the ladies' local. And of course, most of the girls in the cutting rooms, they used sew tickets, belonged to Local 275. See, like now in Hearts, on my floor, Factory L, there was only three of us that belonged to 275. All the rest were either 39 or 270 members.
Either Italian, the Italian or
yeah,
the English
or the
speaking.
English-speaking.
Did you start out in 39?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you transferred when you went to Shane's, is that right?
No, I transferred while I was still working at the Progress, when I believe I told you that the chair lady, her name was Sophie Kobosh. In fact, I don't even know if she's still living in Los Angeles. She was the chair lady, and she was one of the originators of Local 275. So she was recruiting members among the women, you know. So she came up to me one day, and she said, Marie, how would you like to transfer to the ladies' local? So to me, one local was like another, you know. I didn't know beans about either one, you know. So I said, all right. So she just automatically transfer me over to 275. So then when we were bowling one time downstairs, my former business agent, he was a business agent of Local 39, his name was Sal Kramer, he says to me, why don't you transfer back to Local 39? Because they needed active girls in the local at the time, and the only girl that they really had on their executive board was this Anna Smuda, who was an assistant chair lady at Hart. So I said, well, why should I? I said, I'm an officer of 275. Why should I transfer back to 39? He says, well, he says, you know, we could use somebody like you in Local 39. He says, we'll make an officer out of you. He said, we'll put you on the executive board. By that time, I was pretty well entrenched in Local 275, and Clara Leon was one of my best friends. In fact, her, Ruth Falk, and I always traveled together. See, she happened to be a career girl, and I never married, and Rose was married, and her husband was on the board of directors here, and she was pretty well entrenched in the union. So I wouldn't play a dirty trick like that to Clara or the local. So I said, oh, no, I said, I'm satisfied where I'm at. So I never did switch over to 39.
Why were they concerned about getting women specifically back into 39?
Well, for one reason, Clara was always after them. You know, about not giving the girls a break. And through Clara's influence, they put another girl in that belonged to our choir who worked at High Chapman Marks by the name of Antoinette Levandusky. She was put into the executive board. Then almost every election they try to get another girl in until, well, now I think they had about six or seven girls on the board, which for many years they only had one. And this one, I guess, they had her on the board more or less because she was pretty aggressive, you know. She, and being that she was an assistant chair lady too, and she was very friendly, family friend of the head chairman of Hart Schaffner Marks, who was Sal Brenzel's father, Benny Brenzel. So they eventually started getting more and more women into their local.
So Local 275, in addition to trying to recruit women to that local, was pressuring the others.
Other locals to get more women active into their locals, yes. Clara was always a champion of women, you know. In fact, until we really start rolling the ball around here, we used to go to the Women's Trade Union League to all their different meetings and affairs, you know, and different lectures and all that. That's how we got our dramatic teacher. In those days, they had the WPA, and she was out of work. So through the Women's Trade Union League, we got a hold of this Judy Ryerson, and she was also a physical education teacher, and she used to conduct our gym classes and teach us dramatics twice a week. So we started the dramatic club. And of course, the choir, we started with Dr. Lieberson, which I mentioned before, to Mr. Levin. He was a very good friend of Mr. Levin. And so then, of course, the bowling. We had the bowling alley downstairs. First, we started with a mixed league, because we didn't have enough women that were interested in bowling. So we had, I think, 3 girls and 2 men on each team. And then the women started their own league on a Wednesday night. And we had the bowling league for many, many years. In fact, I quit bowling when I started getting arthritis on my fingers. I got a trophy home, you know, I was captain of my team. And my team won the trophy one season, you know, the big trophy. So we had that in Clara's office, and when they disbanded her office, I don't even know what happened to it. They had a bunch of trophies in here. I don't know what happened to all the trophies that we had around here. So, and each team was named after certain activities. Like ours was a choir. Ours was called a choir, and some were the gym. You know, one team was called the gym team, and different activities.
Was when you were mentioning that club that was that people were involved in it, was that Shapiro's of Progress? I can't remember.
You mean the social and athletic club? No, that was from all the different shops. Anybody
was that like a were those people in a sense the beginnings of the kinds of activities that eventually evolved in this building? Or?
No, I wouldn't say that. It was just the young people used to get together, you know, the younger crowd. And we used to dance up in the Deb's room. We used to have these little dances. And we just charged a small fee, just enough to pay for expenses. And we'd have the broom dance. And, yeah, we'd have a lot of fun. Once a month, we'd get up there and get together. And then we'd have this money for our trips. We'd go on hikes and different things. And in fact, Sam Crayman, who used to run the bowling alley downstairs, he was president of the club. See. So it wasn't really the union itself didn't have anything to do with that fund. In other words, like the retiree center is. They have their own officers and their own executive board members and all that, you know. And that's how the club started, more or less, as a social affair.
Was that club in operation when the building was built then?
Yeah, well, that's when it really started. Until the building was put up, I don't know what went on because I wasn't active. See, as I told you, I'd never go to that place there on Hosser Street. It was just a hole in the ground and all, you know, small rooms and all that. I never went to any of their meetings. They used to hold most of their big meetings at the Ashland Auditorium, which was across the street where that gas station is. They had a big building there. It belonged to the Carmen, Street Carmen Hall, you know. And then they named it the Ashland Auditorium. So all our big mass meetings and everything were held there. In fact, they used to have concerts there and things like that, you know, because we didn't have the facilities over here or anything like that. So,
was one of the main reasons that you didn't really get involved until the building was built was that there weren't really facilities? There weren't things that particularly...
No, that wasn't really it. It was because I, as I told you, for 3.5 years I worked nights. And, I really worked for 7.5 years, but I mean, those 3.5 years I worked steady. Then I went back later. And then there wasn't the facilities, and I didn't know a lot of these people that were active, you know, in the union, until the building was put up and I joined the gym. Then I started meeting a lot of these girls, you know, like Clara and Minnie and a few others that belonged to the local. Outside of Sophie Kobosh, I didn't know anybody that belonged to the local 275. Mm-hmm. See, and when I mentioned that, they told me there's a bunch of old maids that belong to Local 275. They almost killed me. What do you mean, a bunch of old maids? You come to the meeting. So I said, well, when do you have your meeting? They said, the first Tuesday of the month. Well, after that, I start coming to their meetings, you know, the first Tuesday of the month, which they also had right after work, you know. So that's when I started becoming active. So then they put me on the executive board, and I was on the executive board ever since, until I become vice president, and then from vice president I switched over to financial secretary. Because our vice president was having a little difficulty with, our financial secretary was having a little trouble, and she couldn't function the way she should, so Clara asked me to switch over with her at our next election, which I did. So I was financial secretary until I retired in 69.
When you first got, could you describe, if you could, maybe the clothing industry a little bit when you first got into it? Was there a certain concentration of shops in a particular area? Were there shops that were more appealing than others to work in?
Well, that I couldn't say, because as I told you, I only worked in 3 different shops.
Uh-huh.
Well, the Progress Tailoring Company was located on Wells and Harrison. And around the corner on Wells Street was the Royal Tailors. And Shapiro, in that building there that I worked in, used to be on the 7th floor, and the Progress Tailoring Company had the upper floors. See, then the Progress bought out Shapiro. I first started for Shapiro in 1919. And I only worked for him a short time when the Progress bought them out. See, which Agnes told you that they used to contract work from us, you know. And, I didn't know Agnes at that time. The reason why I knew Rose Falk is because we were raised in the same neighborhood. And I knew her from the neighborhood, you know. In fact, Rose and I have been friends for many, many years. When we both joined the gym here, after the building was put up, we become closer, you know, together. Cause we both had the same thing in common, you know. We start telling around together. In fact, even after she was married, her and I and Clara used to always be pretty slick. And her husband, we used to always say Johnny was one of the girls, you know, because he was always included with the girls. You know? Like when we'd be talking sometimes, you know, you're not, are you recording that?
There's a couple of things I'd like to talk a little bit more about. Your first job was at the book bindery, right?
Mm-hmm. That was when I was still going to school, doing school vacations.
You went like during vacations? Mm-hmm. Did they give you a permit, or how did that?
I just told them I was a year older than I was. I told them I was 14. They didn't ask any questions because it so happened that my oldest brother at that time wasn't married, and he was going with an Irish girl by the name of Rose O'Donnell, and her brother was a foreman in this department that I started work. So, you know, he kind of overlooked the fact that I wasn't quite 14.
He didn't actually know, no. Or he did know and just kind of...
I told him I was 14, so they just took it for granted I was telling the truth. Then when I started to work at the tailor shop, I wasn't of age, so I started working under a different name. See?
You were, how old were you then?
I was only 15. I was supposed to go to continuation school, which I didn't go to. You know, I told you I used to go and hide in the washroom when the truant officer would come over.
Was that at Shapiro's?
Yeah, Shapiro's and the Progress. See, I was working under the name of Maria Lane. And then I changed to my right name when Social Security came into effect. Then I had to put my right name down. So a lot of the people here, even Agnes, every once in a while, says Maria Lane. She refers to me under that old title, you know. But one of the girls in the neighborhood had to go to work at an early age, and then by that time I was able to get a school certificate, which I didn't ever apply to, but I did on account of this girl. She went to work under my name again, which is a cousin to that girl I was pointing out to you, that my mother and her aunt came from Europe together. Her cousin got working under my name then.
When you were old enough?
Yeah. No, when I was past 14, because at 14 you could get a work permit. So you didn't have to go to high school in the...
At 14 you could get a work permit, but you were supposed to go to continuation school, right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So didn't you work at the bindery after you finished?
Yeah, I went back.
For a while?
I went back. I worked there for about a year. When this girl that lived downstairs from us got me the job, and the ladies... For the international lady garment worker, she worked in one of their shops sewing snappers on skirts. Remember, I told you that the girl was being fired and eight of us quit? Well, that's where I went to work. I only worked there a short time when we all decided to quit because the girl was being fired. So that's, from that point, is where I went into the tailor shop.
I'm trying to get a little, like a time sequence here. You started at the book bindery when you were 13,
mm-hmm.
working during vacations.
Yeah.
Then when you were 14, when you finished school, is that when you worked full-time for a while there?
Yeah. And I worked full-time.
And then you went to the shop with Sophie. When were you still 14 then?
I was about 15 then.
Uh-huh.
And when I start working at the tailor shop, I was about 15, because then I was working as a hand worker, you know, basting the things onto the floor part. And when my father died in 1920, I was 17, and that's when I was put on a machine, because the foreman, he was a pretty nice guy at that time, as foreman's go, you know, and he came over to the wake, and he saw that my mother had the five children going to school, so I stayed home a week after my dad passed away because my mother was taking it up so hard. So in order to keep her company, I stayed home for a whole week. So when I went back to work, he said, well, I see you're going to be the breadwinner. He says, would you like to, and that you'll have to earn more money. He says, would you like to learn something on a machine? I said, oh, yes, I'd like that. You know, I sew on a machine at home, but it was a foot pedal machine. I never worked on a power machine. So he says, well, what would you like to learn? Pocket making or lining making? So the pocket makers all advised me to learn lining making because you didn't have to match stripes or, you know, what the work wasn't as tedious. So that's when I got on the machine, and then after I got a little more speed, and I started making more than my hour rate, which at the time was only down a quarter an hour. So then they put me peace.